Welcome in, everybody. It is the first ever Jets Collective. Hit the like button. Make sure you're subscribed to a brand new channel. I'm joined with BT, Brandon Tierney, Rich Simini from ESPN. My name is Jake Asman, and we are part of a brand new show that will be breaking down the New York Jets each and every week right here on this channel. BT, Rich, I've known both of you guys for a long time. Great to work with each of you. BT, I'm starting with you. Let's go, man. We got a lot of Jet passion, and I'm excited to chop it up every week.
This is going to be awesome, man. You know, hopefully at some point within the next 5 years, we have good stuff to talk about. But if there's ever a soap opera to follow, man, it's obviously this franchise. And I know that when I was approached with this and, you know, I'm like, well, who's involved? And they're like, Jake, I'm like, great Jets content, young dude coming up, you know, coming up. And I like good energy. And then I've known Rich so long. I used to have Rich on my old radio show on 1050, you know, before it was 880 and 98.7 back in the day. So thrilled to be here. Jet fans, we got you. Let's roll.
Love it. And Rich, I mean, BT brought up you going on radio shows with him. I had you on with Mike Tannenbaum every Sunday, and Rich has been coming on shows I've done, you know, during my Ithaca College radio days. So it's a long time coming. But Rich, you're the longest tenured Jets beat reporter ever. So there's no one better to have on a show breaking down the state of the Jets than you. Welcome to the Jets Collective.
It's great to be with you guys. I've been covering the Jets longer than you've been alive, Jake. So that gives you some perspective. And I've been often, like, people question me on that. Like, what are you, crazy? Are you insane doing that? And I just kind of feel like I'm trapped in a movie and I'm waiting for the ending to come and it hasn't happened yet. And so I want to see it through. And like BTC, maybe within the next 5 years, something, you know, maybe there's a Cinderella story ending there, but that's what keeps me into it. I love talking Jets, and I love talking with two guys who are passionate and knowledgeable like you guys are.
And by the way, Rich, wait, did you ever at any point in all these years of the great work, did you ever go and say, hey guys, can I jump on the Giants beat for a minute? Can I get out of here?
Oh, why would I want to go on the Giants? The Giants, it's too sane over there. You know, the Jets, you never know what's going to happen with the Jets. Some days you walk in there and you're like, oh man, this is going to be a boring day. And then something crazy happens that you never expected. And so from a journalistic perspective, the Jets are great. The Jets are great to cover.
Yep. Well, how about that for a segue by Rich? Because speaking of things that are crazy, if you would have told a Jet fan once Geno Smith left the team that he would be back in the year 2026 as their quarterback, I think everyone would have thought you'd be nuts. So, Rich, let's start there as our jumping off point here on the Jets Collective. The first topic in the history of the Jets Collective, the return of Geno Smith. Let's kind of go back to the beginning of all this. When did it become real to you, Rich, that Geno Smith was a legit option for the Jets as they were trying to find a quarterback this offseason?
Yeah, really just a couple of days before, you know, when the field was kind of taking shape. You knew Kyler Murray wasn't going to go to the Jets. He wanted no part of the Jets. You knew he was going to Minnesota. And they really had no interest in Kirk Cousins. And Tua was not really on the Jets' radar. And he didn't want to come north anyway. He didn't want to go out of the warm weather. So he ended up in a good place indoors in Atlanta. So that's when it kind of became a possibility. But still, honestly, I didn't really totally believe it until it happened. You talk about, like, Jet history. The day he got punched in the locker room in 2015 is number one on my most bizarre days ever with the Jets. That even more bizarre than the Bill Belichick resignation, because that was just, you just don't see that. And so to have him back on the team is really surreal. And he used the words full circle, I guess, full circle. But I'm not sure if I love the move, but I think it's the best move they could have made under some pretty difficult circumstances.
Interesting, because to me, I don't know anybody who loves the move. There's nobody sitting there saying, the Jets are ready to cook. They got Geno. But to me, you got to look at it really, really one of two ways. Number one, evaluate Geno as a quarterback and separate the Jets stuff and getting punched by IK and being drafted by the Jets and all that stuff. Just Geno, the quarterback now, and then measure that against the other options, many of which Rich just ran through. I mean, was there a Jets fan who wanted to see Tua with that pop gun arm trying to throw in the winds of MetLife? I didn't want to see that. Anybody really want Carson Wentz? I didn't really want that. Did anybody really want it? And I was a little intrigued by this name. You know, but it's a lot of money, $30-something million from Malik Willis. I don't know. I know he's talented, but that seemed like it was a big swing for not enough evidence. So to me, you know, listen, this is just about getting, really, guys, a baseline level of competence. Part of the reason that the Jets could never take a step forward, like everyone's like, no, the Jets never have a tight end or the Jets never have a lot of wide receivers. Well, that's true because they never have anybody that could get these guys to football. So just to at least get Mason Taylor, who was ever opposite Garrett, Breece out of the back hole. He's competent. You got to start there, Jake. You have to.
I think that's well said. And like here's my thing with Geno, BT. Can he go out there? And it's funny because it's kind of ironic. We're asking him to replicate the Ryan Fitzpatrick 2015 season. If you want to be a positive, you know, glass half full Jet fan, that season only happens because of the IK incident in the first place. Can he go out there and be competent so you could properly evaluate? Do you have a coaching staff? Do you have, you talked about tight ends and receivers. You know, do you have a functioning offense? Because I don't think anyone expects Geno to be the long-term answer, but I think at the minimum, he's a guy that is going to be light years better than any quarterback they put on the field this past season.
Well, here's what I know. And Rich, jump in by all means, but here's what I know. You know, when somebody's open, he's probably going to put the ball in the vicinity of their hands, you know, which will give the Jets a chance. Like, I'm not even being flippant. I mean, some of these guys, they've trotted out there. We all know the names. Good God almighty. I mean, it's been wretched, man. They've had no chance to even remotely compete. So it's a Band-Aid. It's a stopgap. But, Rich, again, for a lot of the reasons I've already said, it's one that I'm oddly okay with. Again, if you separate the drama and all the Jets and Geno's back, the guy's a decent quarterback. He just is.
Yeah, the drama and the history doesn't matter here. Let's look at, if you look at it objectively, he's been on a two-year decline. However, I will say this. If you look at last year, you know, we all talk about 17 interceptions. He led the league. Well, I went back and watched the All-22. Every one of those interceptions, five of them came on deflections. So little bad luck. 12 is still a lot. Okay. You don't want 12, but five of them, bad luck, deflections. And I talked to Pete Carroll last week and he told me, he goes, we did a bad job last year in Las Vegas. Our offensive line got manhandled. He used the word murdered. Our offensive line got murdered on a week-to-week basis. He goes, it was extremely difficult for Geno. He thinks Geno still has a lot of good football left in him. So if you believe in Pete Carroll, and I trust the guy. I mean, he's been around a long, long time. He knows Pete. Obviously, he's a little biased here. He's had Geno for about 8 or 9 years. But he thinks the guy's still got something left in the tank.
Jake?
Look, I think at the end of the day, who are the other options is what BT was saying, and that's fair. I just wonder, and we'll get to this coming up when we talk about the quarterback conversation, is the plan just for Geno to be the guy the whole time, or did they articulate to Geno, hey, there could be another young quarterback that's coming in the pipeline? Rich, do you have some insider info on that?
Geno is the guy. And, you know, I talked to some other agents who represent other quarterbacks, and they were all told, you know, that, represent backup quarterbacks, you know, that, or, you know, obviously they have to bring in a backup at some point. They were told that Geno is the guy, you know, all these agents. Now, I'm sure Geno was told, look, there's a chance we may draft someone. So I think he's totally prepared for that. But right now, even though no one has said it publicly, they've said it to other agents. They've said it privately. Geno Smith will go into the season as their QB1.
Listen, guys, of course, Rich nailed that. There's no doubt that he's going to start. And I think he's going to play unless, like, again, we'll get to the quarterback options in the draft, whatever. But, you know, so many of the sports now, baseball's been overtaken by numbers. Like, you just get force-fed these numbers, right? Analytics and all that stuff. And I love analytics, right? I think it could be boring when you talk about it too much. But at the end of the day, numbers do matter. And the numbers that we've been staring at for too many years is, you know, from a multitude of Jets quarterbacks, 59% completion percentage, 2,900 yards, 13 touchdowns, 17 or 18 picks. You just know that this guy's going to show up and it's going to be around 65, 66 completion percentage, over 30, you know, probably 32, 33,000 yards and 20 touchdowns. And that's when I say, like, to raise the, I don't want to sound like Michael Jordan when he said the floor is the roof or whatever he said, but to raise the ceiling, you got to start by elevating the floor. And Geno does that.
One thing I will say about Geno, he's accurate. Over the last 4 years, his completion percentage is 68%, which is fourth in the league over the last 4 years. I mean, what Jet quarterback do we know? You have to go back to Chad Pennington to find a quarterback who completes 68% of his passes. So he is accurate. Let's say that about him.
Yeah. Well, at least throw it downfield, too. For what it's worth, how many times have we watched Jet quarterbacks just stand there in the pocket and not play with any rhythm and timing? At least Geno will give some of these receivers, and we'll have that conversation, I'm sure, on the Jet Collective here, what they do next to Garrett Wilson. But at least someone's going to get a chance to make a play. Speaking of the Jet Collective, if you're just tuning in, this is the debut episode. We got BT, Brandon Tierney, Rich Cimini from ESPN. I'm Jake Asbett, host of the Jake Asbett Show here on YouTube, and you can hear me on ESPN New York. Make sure, if you're new to the channel, which is basically all of you, you are subscribed to the channel. That helps the channel grow. Also, give us a thumbs up, that like button, that thumbs up icon. You click that, takes 2 seconds. That helps the channel grow as well. For those asking about a podcast, an audio version of the show, we're being told it will be available on Apple, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcast in a couple of days. So be on the lookout for that. But for right now, make sure you are subscribed to our channel here on YouTube. Rich, since you brought up the backup quarterback situation, while we're on that topic, what is the latest on that end? It seems like a lot of the backup names we talked about are signing elsewhere, and the Jets are sitting in a spot where I believe their quarterback depth chart is Geno Smith, Bailey Zappe, and Brady Cook.
What is it you're saying? That's not a great depth chart, is what you're saying? Yeah, so they're obviously going to sign someone or trade for someone. You saw Joe Flacco get signed today with Cincinnati. The Jets were not interested in Joe Flacco. Woody Johnson, not the biggest fan. And also, Joe Flacco got $6 million from Cincinnati, and there's no way the Jets are going to pay $6 million for that backup job. And, you know, Joe really likes Cincinnati. So the Jets were never in on Joe Flacco. I think it's going to be Tyrod Taylor, who's still free, and Cooper Rush, who was cut recently by Baltimore. He did not play great last year. You know, he had 2 starts. He played poorly, but he did some good things a few years ago with Dallas when he had that run when Dak Prescott was out. So he's an option.
He was good.
He had a little bit of a run there. He's not old. He's only 31 or 32. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's wide open at this point. I think they'll bring in a veteran, and I think possibly they could draft a guy. I don't think it'll be an early draft pick, but they could bring in a developmental type guy to be their third quarterback.
One more thing, guys. You know, when the news broke, Geno's back, right? Obviously, you get the initial tidal wave of hate and the Jet. Everybody clowning the Jets. That's fine, right? But I'll tell you, and it's a greater, more macro issue about Muji, which I know we'll get to, but it was an astute move by Muji as well, because they're like, well, you traded for him. First of all, the Raiders are basically paying all the money, number one. So it's peanuts. You're paying 30 cents on the dollar for a quarterback that's got, at the minimum, at least a decent resume, number one. Number two, like, there were other teams that were interested in Geno. So by trading and swapping, I think it was a 6th and the 7th, you beat, I'm not saying you had 10 teams lined around the corner, but it was a good proactive move that just gives me more, like, Glenn's a different story, but these little things that Muji does, like, this guy gets it. He's just, yeah. he's a modern trader. He gets the modern business of the NFL.
They got a other pick for Justin Fields. I mean, that to me was astonishing too. They got exactly. Anything for Justin Fields.
Muji's done a really good job in those type of moves. Now, it's unfortunate. The landscape is that the Jets had to make that trade. They couldn't take a chance on Geno getting cut by the Raiders. And that's kind of sad because Jets know they're probably operating from a disadvantage trying to recruit a free agent, you know, if there's another team involved. So Muji was proactive. He goes out, he goes, what big deal? 7th round pick, you know, we'll swap that. We're only paying $3 million. The Raiders are picking up the rest. And so it was a good aggressive move. Same thing with Minka Fitzpatrick. The Jets didn't want to take a chance on having to recruit him as a free agent. So they went out and they made the trade with Miami. And by the way, they're giving him $20 million guaranteed, which to me is a little steep for his age and position. Nevertheless, I think Muji's been very proactive, very aggressive. I like these moves that he's making.
Jake, think about this, Jake. It comes down to this. The Jets can't take the risk of people not wanting to come, so they've got to be a step ahead. Like, hey, you might not want to come here given the choice, so we're not giving you a choice. We're trading for you, and you have to come. We're going to hold you hostage is basically what – that's the Jets' new mantra.
And I'll tell you what, like the thing with Muji that I've been impressed with is the fact that if you really go back to the end of training camp when they made the Harrison Phillips and Juwan Briggs deal for 6th round picks, since then, and then they have the Brownlee move in season. However people feel about trading Sauce and Quinnen, there's no denying they got max value for those players when they did. It feels like the biggest strength of this regime so far, Rich, has been Muji's ability to basically make trades with other GMs around the league.
Yeah, he's made 12 trades, and he's been on the job basically 12 or 13 months. He's made 12 trades. The only GM who's made more trades in that span is Howie Roseman, who's made 14. And you're talking – Howie is a veteran, seasoned GM. Muji's new to it, and he's really active. He's done a good job of finding those complementary pieces, those fill-in-the-blank pieces. Now he's got to be able to take some of this massive draft – you know, treasure chest of draft picks and go out and get the big pieces, get the dynamic players with the 2nd pick, with the 16th pick, because that's what the Jets are lacking. They don't have, maybe they have 1 or 2 dynamic players, they need a lot more.
That's why it was so important for Breece Hall to stay. But, you know, anybody can be aggressive. Like, any GM could go out there and make a boatload of deals. But the thing that, to me, he's got to find his quarterback at some point, and that would be the ultimate barometer on Muji here. But, I mean, being aggressive but not being on point, those are two very different things. Like, he's aggressive, but he seems to – his instincts seem to be good. Like, am I an idiot for believing in Muji? Like, I believe in this guy, man. I really do.
Well, you just made a great point, BT, because, I mean, there was a time where people were praising Joe Douglas, too.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, he got Trader two first-rounders for Jamal Adams. That was like the steal of the century. Oh, Joe Douglas is great, but he screwed up the one thing he had to do, which was get the quarterback right, and he picked Zach Wilson, and that set off a chain reaction of bad things. So that's what Muji's facing right now. He's got to solve the quarterback position.
Another great segue, Rich. So let's talk about Ty Simpson. I'm sure this will be an ongoing conversation that the three of us have on this channel leading right up to the draft. But he's being mocked at 16 by a lot of people in the industry to the Jets. I know Mel Kiper Jr.'s latest mock had the Jets selecting Simpson. You have Dan Orlovsky coming out on Get Up yesterday saying he thinks Simpson is the best quarterback in this draft over Fernando Mendoza. So, BT, I'll start with you because you're the diehard Jet fan like me. What's the reaction if the Jets on draft night pull the trigger on Ty at 16?
I'm more okay with it than probably a lot of Jet fans. Listen, I think there's really three scenarios. And listen, they can make a trade, so I guess there's another one. But let's say they stay at 2-16. It's going to be defense and then defense again. Defense and then Ty Simpson or defense and receiver if a receiver that they like drops to him. So that's how I see those two playing out. Or those scenarios, I should say. I like Simpson. Like you, I think you have to really understand. I don't mean you guys, but a lot of people who are reluctant to even entertain the thought of drafting Simpson, they don't realize how bad the Bama's rushing attack was this year. He threw it like 73% of the time. They were like 150th in big time college football in terms of rushing yards per attempt. So he was always behind the sticks. He was hurt as well. And I think he lost about 15 or 16 pounds from an illness. So he lost his strength toward the end of the season. I don't love him, but I like him enough to certainly consider him. I like the guy.
I would not take him at 16.
Why?
I think that would be a reach for the Jets. I like looking at history and data. And if you go back all the way to 2011 draft, there's been about 7 or 8, maybe 9 quarterbacks with fewer than 17 college starts. Only one of them turned out to be a good quarterback, and that was Cam Newton, who was a freakish athlete with the size, the speed, and the other thing. Simpson doesn't have any traits that jump off the page. He's 6'1". He doesn't have a great arm. He has an okay arm. He's not, like, super mobile. I mean, he's okay, but he's not super mobile. He doesn't have any one trait that jumps off the tape. He's a second round pick in my opinion. Or if they took him at 33, I probably wouldn't have a problem with that. You do not take a quarterback like that at 16.
But Jake,
15 starts, no way.
Okay, so Jake, I'm going to get you involved on this here. I hear you, Rich. I get it. That's a sound philosophy, right? But like, all right, so whether it's the first pick of the second round or late, like if you're going to draft a guy, like Simpson's not going beyond the second round early, clearly. So If the Jets draft him in the second round, they're still drafting him to eventually be their quarterback. So, like, if you would do that early in round two, why not do it at 16 if you kind of like the guy, Jake?
Well, here's what I would say to that. There's less pressure on him having to play if you take him in the second round. If you take him at 16 and Geno's going to start the year, how many games does Ty Simpson actually get in there and play? And he's going to have to play at some point, I'd imagine, because you have 3 first-round picks in 2027. So how do you weigh what you have in Ty versus do we take a quarterback in a perceived to be better quarterback class? We'll see how it actually plays out. I just think it really muddies the waters. I like him, BT, but to Rich's point, I made this graphic on my personal show. I mean, the start numbers are not great here for Ty Simpson compared to the other peers with less than 20 career starts. This is what Rich was referencing, right? You got Anthony Richardson, Dwayne Haskins, Kyler Murray, Trey Lance, Ryan Tannehill. So That scares me as a Jet fan. When the Jets don't need to get the quarterback this year, when they're set up with the 3-1s next year, I'd rather take a player that can help Aaron Glenn prove whether or not he could be the guy, whether it's a receiver to help Geno and show some competency this year, and then they're set up next year. But if they did it in the second round, this is where I'm kind of toeing the line. I would understand it. It's not my preference, but the earliest I could take him, I agree with Rich, is pick 33.
Well, by the way, Jake busting out some graphics here. I mean, Jets Collective spare no expenses. I mean, wait till we really start building this thing out.
Impressive stuff.
I got you guys there. Let me float this, and whoever wants to take it first, go for it. So I'm more bullish on Simpson than you, and they need clearly a massive influx of talent everywhere. We all know that. What if they trade out of two, which I think is, I don't know if it's very likely, but I think it's somewhat plausible, somewhat.
Who's coming up?
Maybe Tennessee. Some people think that they want the running back. So or say if they actually trade out of two to, you know, then six, seven, five, whatever it might be, and they get an extra first round pick, and you could still go defense or defense receiver and then Simpson at 16. Does that change anybody's opinion here or no?
I think it's highly, I mean, I see what you're saying about trading out of two. Frankly, that it probably makes sense to do that because you can probably get the same player a couple of spots down.
Yes.
I don't think it's Tennessee. I think maybe the Giants, you know, they've been linked to Love, you know, but trading up for a running back that high in the draft is highly unorthodox.
Yeah.
The scenario I could see with Simpson is that the Jets pick at 1 and 16 and then move up. They pull like a Giants did with Jackson Dart last year, and they move up to bottom of the first round. Then they get Simpson, much like they did with Jermaine Johnson in 2022 when they came up bottom of the first. What did they get him at, 27 or something like that?
I think it was 27. I think it's 26 or 27.
I can see something like that because then you kind of appease everyone in the building. You know, Aaron Glenn gets his two guys, you know, at 2 and 16 that can go in and help him right away. The front office and the ownership get their shiny new quarterback that they could start grooming for the future. I could see a scenario like that.
It's an interesting way to lay it out. Here would be my question, Rich. Maybe you have some insight on this. We talk about Ty Simpson, and, you know, I got him to do the jet chant at the combine, you know, when I asked him about his message to fans. So people are going crazy for him. But, like, do the Jets actually view Ty Simpson as a legit option for them as a franchise QB? And I ask that because they might like him, but if they don't love him, they don't need to take him. You have Geno. There's no, to me, and you can answer this better than I could, Rich, I don't get the sense there's ownership pressure to figure out the quarterback situation like immediately, like it needs to be done in this draft. This is not the Giants a year ago where Mara made it clear to Shane and Dable, you need to get a quarterback in here. I don't get the sense like the Muji Glenn front office and coaching staff is operating under the premise we need to figure out our long-term answer this offseason. So do they like Ty or do they love him? Because if they only like him, why take him at 16?
Yeah, I don't know where they have him ranked on their draft board. They're still in the process of doing that. I know that Muji's not going to be at the Alabama Pro Day, which I think is tomorrow. Is it tomorrow or Thursday? He's going to be at Ohio State. So sometimes that doesn't signal anything. He could still like the guy just because he's not there doesn't mean much. But I don't know how strongly they feel about him. I think, based on what I've known, the intel I've been able to gather, I think Muji's grand plan is all pointing to the 2027 draft with the three first rounders and getting one of those quote unquote stud guys next year. That's what I think. Now, if they go through this entire process and they fall in love with Ty Simpson, then maybe they deviate from that plan. But I think their plan right now is geared toward 2027.
Can I tell you, though, and Rich, again, rooted in logic, man, and nobody's got more connections than you. So this isn't an anti your take, but I'm so tired of hearing that. And not because I'm not okay with waiting a year if it's a good sound plan. I mean, I've been waiting for 40 something years, so I could go another year. That's for damn sure. But to me, think about how fluid the quarterback assessments are coming into this year, right? The kid from LSU, he's going to go top 10, going to be a stud, might be top five. Kid stinks. Now, I'm not saying that he can't be a decent pro, but think about it, the perception of him coming in and think about the reality of where he is right now. So this grandmaster plan, punt for 2027, you got three first-round picks, move up and do this and get that guy. Number one, the guy that you want might not be there. And number two, the guy that you want now might not be the guy that you want next year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's risky. A couple of years ago, I mean, look, the Giants tried to trade up to get Drake May, right? And they couldn't crack the top three because it was Caleb, Daniels, and Drake May. And those three teams were locked in. They were not moving out. What if that happens to the Jets? They can't get in there. So it's a risk they're taking. You got to think they've done a lot of scouting ahead of time. I mean, it's supposed to be a really good draft. Not only at quarterback, they're saying it could be historic at a lot of other positions. But with those three number ones and $150 million in cap room next year, if there's a quarterback that's on the trading block, they could go and get that guy too next year.
That's true.
So let's not forget about, remember how a few months ago everyone's talking about Joe Burrow and the Jets about that rumor? On, you know, Joe. A year from now, somebody shakes free, somebody's available. No one's in better position than the Jets to go get a guy like that.
Hit the like button if you're just tuned in. Make sure you guys are subscribed to the channel. I'm being told we're near 1,000 subscribers already, which is awesome. So big thank you to everyone who's watching the debut episode of the Jets Collector here. We're going to do some Q&A at the end. So if you have a question for BT, Rich, or myself, write it in. I'll start. We'll put it up on the screen at the end here. You know, in regards to the Simpson, BT, here's also why I would be willing to take him in the second round. I look at the Saints. Everyone said they were going to be the worst team in the league, but they took Tyler Shuck. I think it was pick 36 of the second round. He ended up getting in there, playing well enough where they actually have some optimism now in New Orleans that they might have a guy. That's why I'm okay with taking the swing on Ty. But I think it's so complicated with the Jets situation because we're all questioning the head coach, and he's got to win certainly more games to save his job. So how does that complicate quarterback development if you're taking a guy at 16? Does he have to play? What does that mean for the head coach? That's why I think it's kind of tough to argue doing it at 16 when you might like the prospect. But to Rich's point, I don't know if you love him, and it's not like the physical traits just jump off the page.
I understand. Again, I do, and I subscribe to a lot of that, right? But I really do feel you on that. But here, let's be very blunt about one thing. I don't care what Aaron Glenn wants, and I don't care what Aaron Glenn thinks. Aaron Glenn means nothing in this equation, at least for me. Aaron Glenn is not tied to Muji at all. Rich, by all means, jump in a sec because you got the connections there. I think Muji, rightfully so, is viewed as a completely separate entity, and Aaron Glenn is swimming upstream without a life preserver, and you know he very well might drown. Not to be so morbid there and graphic with that analogy, but you know, in a football sense, like I'm not doing anything for Aaron Glenn. If Aaron Glenn doesn't like what Muji's putting up on the board, then Aaron Glenn could walk out of the building and quit. Like, he's got no juice and he's got no say. I don't care what he wants, Rich.
Is that true, though, Rich? Because that's the mixed reporting on this, right? Like, on one hand, people are saying, well, Muji's not a sidekick anymore. They're on way more equal footing than people realize. And then on the other side, it's, oh, no, nothing's changed with the Jets' power structure. But the owner did call Darren Muji Glenn's sidekick at the introductory presser. So, like, what is the real truth based on your reporting on the dynamics of who's in charge of the Jets?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. I agree with a lot of what BT said. But Aaron Glenn still has say. I mean, look at the guys they signed on defense. You know, they signed all his guys, Demario Davis, David Onyemata, you know, his guy from New Orleans. Yep. So he still got some say. Everything I've been, I think the Jets would say that nothing's changed with the structure, the way it's set up. And you remember when they were hired, they both report to the owner. You know, Muji reports to Woody Johnson. Aaron Glenn reports to Woody Johnson. They changed their setup previously. It was the other way. It was the coach reporting to the GM. So they both report directly to Woody Johnson. Based on what I've been told, that hasn't changed. I do think they're not joined at the hip. You know, if they were, I don't think they are anymore. And I think Muji has got a plan. I think Woody Johnson is on board with that plan. It's a long-term plan, as we just talked about, with the 2027 draft. And so Aaron Glenn's got to win. I mean, Aaron Glenn wins three or four games next year.
He's gone.
There'll be a new coach under Darren Muji. You know, Muji will be going out hiring his next coach.
Yes, sir. Sure. Can I ask you guys a question? We have hit Muji. We've hit the coach. We've hit, you know, what are you going to do with 16 and 2 and maybe trade in second round with Simpson and free agents and signings? I mean, even if the Jets are going in a good direction and they hit some draft picks and things look pretty good, the first speed bump that they hit, do we really believe that Woody Johnson is going to keep his beak out of this and prevent it from becoming an absolute circus again? I mean, let's be real. This is the Jets collective. This is going to be the preeminent, aside from Jake, his individual show, the preeminent collective Jet show that's out there for anybody to watch. And I don't know how anybody thinks about the Jets without thinking that Woody's an absolute clown owner. By far the worst owner in football. I know he spends, and I think he's a decent guy, but he sucks as an owner. He's horrendous.
Well, he does spend money. I mean, spending and spending wisely are two different things, but he does spend. Look, I'm a huge believer in the Parcells-ism. You are what your record says you are. In Woody Johnson's 25 years of ownership, the Jets have the fifth worst winning percentage in the league, and the teams below them, you could probably the Raiders, the Browns, the Cardinals, you know, the predictable teams.
All so, made the playoffs more recently than the last time.
Yeah, look, the Jets, by the way. There you go. Hey, the Buffalo Sabres are making the playoffs this year. The Jets are now going to be standing alone as the longest single active playoff drought. Sorry to bring that up for Jet fans. I know it's it's a sore subject. But hey, look, Woody, I think Woody, obviously he does meddle. He's done that in the past. I think he has a lot of trust in Aaron Glenn. He's known him for a long time. So I think he'll give Glenn more of a benefit of the doubt than he would for Saleh. He didn't hire Saleh. He and Saleh didn't even get along that great. So I think Woody was like quick with the axe to get rid of Saleh because he felt no loyalty to him. I think he feels loyalty to Aaron Glenn, plus the fact that he owes him $48 million or something, something like that. So I think Glenn is going to get a long runway here for the entire season. And we'll see where, and I mean, unless they go 0-7 again, but I don't think that'll happen. But yeah, I think he believes in Aaron Glenn and he wants to see it through. So I think Woody's going to try to stay out of it for as long as he can.
I guess here's the question I have based on, you know, everything that went on last week with the power dynamics of the organization. If they were to disagree on a major decision, say it's, you know, pick two in the draft, or it's, you know, whether or not the draft Ty Simpson, Rich, from your reporting and just knowing the organization, who at this point would win that actual face-off, Muji or Glenn?
Well, it depends. I mean, if it's a draft decision, I think it would be Muji, you know. So I think it would be a Muji. I mean, I think they try to work in concert with each other. I think clearly Aaron Glenn had a lot of say in free agency, just looking at those guys they picked up to help on defense. And, you know, but I think if it came down to like a Ty Simpson decision, I think Muji would probably have the final call there.
Isn't that the way it's supposed to be for a healthy franchise? Like, isn't that supposed to be the way the business is set up? Like, at the end of the day, the GM is, hey, you might disagree, unless you're Bill Parcells or one of the Harbaughs. Right. Come on. I mean,
there's only a few coaches. Yeah, there's only a few coaches that have the full, you know, like Shanahan in San Francisco.
The autonomy.
You know, Peyton in Denver. Mm-hmm. You know, Aaron Glenn's got a lot of juice, though. I mean, he's not just your average coach. I mean, he carries a lot of weight within the organization. I think maybe that's, I mean, internally, maybe it hasn't shifted on paper, but, you know, I think internally, maybe it's shifted a little bit. Certainly the perception has changed a little bit, but some of that is because we're in the off season and it's more Muji talk now. During the regular season, he's hidden from public view and it's the Aaron Glenn show. But to answer your question, Jake, I think if it came down to a huge decision, I think like draft related, then I think it would be Muji.
I just think it was interesting that, you know, standing there at the combine presser, Glenn, when talking about, you know, all his brand new coaching staff. And I mean, other than Hugh Jackson over the last 25 years, no one fired more assistants, including both coordinators, after a year than he did. So
yeah,
Glenn made note of the fact, though, that Muji and Rick Spielman helped him with hiring some of these coaches. And I remember a year ago in the same spot at the combine, he was raving about all the hires that he made for his staff. So I definitely get the sense just from the outside looking in that Muji's way more involved than he was at this time a year ago.
Yeah, and Glenn did say that on the day the season ended as well. When he talked about hiring a defensive coordinator to replace Wilkes, he goes, and Muji's going to be involved in this as well. So we knew that going into the offseason. That whole coaching thing, that was a mess. I mean, just the way they tore it down with the delay. They waited 2 weeks before they fired those guys. And then, you know, with the whole Wink thing, it was a very, very clumsy process. In the end, I think maybe they got it right because I think Glenn should be calling the defense. And I like the Frank Reich hire. We haven't even talked about Frank Reich. I think that was one of the keys to the offseason. I really thought it was important to get a quarterback-type coach in there running the offense, and I think Reich will be good.
And that, by the way, that's kind of Geno's skill set there, and we'll see what they do in the draft here. But you look at the players that Frank Reich historically likes to coach, bigger, stronger, strong arm, downfield. You know, that's why Tua, you know, throwing changeups left and right. You know, I agree that I like the Frank Reich hire. I do believe it's a little overstated. I mean, everybody says, well, the Jets have their head coach in waiting if and when they move on from Aaron Glenn. Okay, they very well might. But is that a good thing? I mean, I think the Frank Reich hype is no longer justified. A couple of years ago, sure. And I think he's competent. I don't think he's anything special. Frank Reich?
I mean, Carolina was a disaster. I mean, that was a dysfunctional situation. He didn't even want to pick Bryce Young. He wanted the other guy. He wanted Stroud. And the owner overruled him there. That was a mess, that situation. Not to say the Jets, you know, they've had their share of messes over the years. But I thought he did an okay job, you know, with all the different quarterbacks he had in Indianapolis. You know, the guy, Luck, walks out on him the week before the season starts practically. He has to go with Brissett. Brissett had a good year. Then they made the playoffs the next year. with was it Ryan the next year, or Wentz maybe the next year? So I mean, I think he's a good offensive coach. He had some stability. Tanner Engstrand was in over his head last year. Yeah. I mean, I know the quarterback situation sucked. Justin Fields was historically bad, but Tanner Engstrand was in over his head, and I think that was a good hire to get Frank Reich.
Rich, from what you know about how that went down, how involved is Reich in some of the personnel decisions in the draft? I mean, how impactful was his voice with some of the free agent signings? They haven't really signed a ton of offensive players at this point, but you know, he's a former quarterback. Bill Musgrave has been a longtime quarterback coach as well, who the Jets hired. Like, how big are their voices in this decision? We talked about Ty, but if not Ty, they're going to draft, I'd imagine, someone at some point. How involved are they?
Frank Reich's involved a lot in personnel, with especially with the quarterbacks. He will have a lot of say. I mean, he was in Miami on Sunday night having dinner with Carson Beck, you know, and Muji and Glenn. Frank Reich was there. Frank Reich was in South Bend today. You saw a picture of him on social media talking to Marcus Freeman. Obviously, it's not a quarterback situation there. There's other players they're looking at. He's going to be in Ohio State. You know, he'll be moving around. Frank Reich, they will lean on Frank Reich. He's their offensive voice. They will be leaning on him a lot.
If he gets us a quarterback, BT, I don't care how he is as a play caller. You know, the Giants fans don't care about Dable as long as he picked Jackson Dart, which he did, and he's not there anymore.
That's true. It's not even to throw shade at Frank Reich. Like, I think that's why I use the word competent. Certainly beyond competent. I just, like, I've heard people like kind of view him as a savior. That's all I'm pushing back on. I'm not even saying you guys are. It just seems like it was a little hijacked. Like, oh my God, the Jets got Frank Reich. All right, good. Okay. It's a solid move. I don't make it much more than solid. That's all.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. I can go, you know, I think he raises the floor. You know, maybe the ceiling isn't terribly high, but he definitely raises the floor. He's a competent guy. He knows what he's doing. He's called plays forever. And it's funny, I was doing some research on a story today and going back through some old clips, and I was reading 1996 clips on the Jets, and I'm writing about how Frank Reich was slumping in the preseason and was going to lose his job to Glenn Foley.
So, yes.
You know, God. Man, time flies.
Glenn Foley, the funny thing too. Jake, what was the first Jets season you remember watching based on your age? What year was it?
Yeah, real young. We're talking 02, 03-ish. Like very young. Now, the Monday Night Miracle, my dad did let me stay up, but I can't pretend like I had any idea what was happening that night.
Well, that's a good dad. I don't know him, but I already like Mr. Asman. That's good stuff. But it's funny, like that night, and not to just relitigate the tortured history of the Jets here. But 96, man. I mean, obviously Keyshawn, the first overall pick. And I know, Rich, I know you know this. Parcells loved Foley, and it didn't pop right away for Glenn Foley. But then remember, in that crazy game in San Francisco back in 98, when the Jets went 12-4 and won the division for the first time, with the overtime game, he threw a couple of touchdowns to Keyshawn, Krabbett. Like, Glenn Foley was balling a little bit. And then, you know, of course, then Vinny took over and it was a 12-win season. But God, that 96 season. And by the way, 95 wasn't much better. That was 3 wins. Yeah.
Glenn Foley outplayed Steve Young in that 98 opener. Go look at the stats. Glenn Foley played out of his mind. Yeah. The Jets lost, of course, in overtime on Garrison's first run. But Parcells liked him. But then Foley made a couple of comments that didn't sit well with the big boss. And the next thing you know, Foley was traded to Seattle, which was at the time considered like Siberia in the NFL. Yep. So Parcells had the last laugh.
I think Geno Smith, by the way, Rich, is the same age that Vinny was in 98. One of my listeners said that. I hope he's right.
We're going down that road. We're going down that road, Jake.
Try to be positive, because everyone says I'm too negative. You know, God forbid I'm negative about a team that won 3 games and missed the playoffs for 15 straight years. But
wouldn't that be a hell of a story, though? I mean, I'm all about the story. You know, we root for the best story. If Geno came in and, like, rallied the Jets back to respectability, that would be an incredible comeback story. So
I think he's got a chance to do it.
You always root for stories like that.
Rich, I think 100%. He's got a chance to – I think he's got a chance to do it. Like, listen, the difference with Vinny, Long Island kid, obviously, but – you know, Geno was drafted by the Jets. I don't think that's the most improbable story. I mean, we've got every week to do this, so we don't have to get – I think they're going to be a little better than some people think this year. I do.
Vinny walked into a really good team. I mean, that team, he had Hall of Famers on offense. You know,
that's true. That's true.
There's no Hall of Famers here. But hey, maybe you're right, BT. You know, I'll come back, I'll eat crow, and if Geno has a good year, well, I'll admit it, I was wrong.
Geno Smith, the second go around with the Jets, unbelievable. Speaking of second go arounds here, DeMario Davis, part of this new look defense, Rich. Let's talk about some of the other moves the Jets have made in free agency. We mentioned the Minkah deal earlier when talking about Muji's trades, but I'll start with you on this, Rich. Your thoughts on some of the offseason either trades or free agent signings that the Jets have made going into year two of Glenn and Muji?
I think the biggest takeaway is this. They completely changed the personality of the defense. Last year's group, not only were they inexperienced, it was just a bad vibe. There was no connectivity on the field between them. They were disjointed. I think there were some egos. There were some prima donnas that they had to get rid of, and they did. And you bring in a guy like DeMario Davis, the ultimate professional. The guy's played 14 years. He's missed one game in 14 years because of an injury at a position like middle linebacker. It's just unheard of. It's mind-boggling. Great leader, vocal. He'll rally the troops. You got Onyemata, who's more of a quiet type guy, but a total professional. Minkah Fitzpatrick on the back end. I can't tell you how many busted coverages they had last year, not to mention the zero interception stat. We haven't even mentioned that. Minkah Fitzpatrick is a strong and tangible guy. He will get everybody lined up on the back end. And just from an intangible standpoint, from a leadership, professionalism, upgrade on the defense for sure.
It was unwatchable. I mean, the problem was awful.
It was
disgraceful. It was deplorably unwatchable. So the problem with the Jets defense, aside from everything, was that they literally had backups becoming starters, and then they had taxi squad guys becoming backups, and then based on injuries, eventually they had taxi squad guys becoming starters. I don't know if this will be a similar script. I'm going to give you a little basketball analogy real quick. When Tom Thibodeau started to change the culture of the Jets with Julius Randle and like Noel and a bunch of guys who, you know, kind of took them to that four seed, and they won, they lost to the Hawks in the playoffs, but they were competitive by playing with integrity and playing with purpose. They didn't have a lot of talent on that team outside of Julius Randle. That to me is one of the reasons why you're bringing somebody like DeMario Davis. So if it is a Reese or if it's a Sonny Styles, whomever they draft, right? Now you get these young bucks in a meeting room, on the practice field, on the team bus, on the charter, and you've got guys like DeMario Davis espousing the virtues of how to be a pro, both verbally and by leading by example. It's a terrific hire. The guy's a winner. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, and he still plays the run really well, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still a thumper against the run. You know, they miss C.J. Mosley. You know, he's not the same kind of, you know, vocal leader that DeMario is. But they missed that professionalism, like the word integrity, great word, BT, integrity in the locker room. Jamie and Sherwood was not up to it last year. You know, he had a mediocre year. They handed everything to him. You're the quarterback of our defense. And he just wasn't up to carrying that mantle. Now it's step aside, Jamie, and here comes DeMario is going to run that show.
Well, I just think they had such a leadership void last year, Rich. Even before the trades, right, when they were trying to win and people say, they're tanking at the end of the year. I mean, they started 0-7. It just felt like, you mentioned no C.J. Mosley, but that was just felt really on both sides of the ball. And I feel like they have, at least defensively now, whether it's Harrison Phillips, who you can guarantee he will be one of their captains this year, Minkah Fitzpatrick and DeMario Davis, I feel like you have a legit professional leader on all three levels of the defense. So, like, it's put up or shut up time for the head coach who said play calling is a superpower. All the moves they made this offseason, including in all likelihood the number two pick in the draft being a premier defensive player. Like, there's no reason for this defense to not go from one of the worst in the league to, at the bare minimum, can you at least be a league average unit in 2026?
Oh, yeah, I think they'll be in the middle somewhere, average. It was just, like I said, it was a bad, like Quinnen Williams before he got traded, he was tired of the losing. It wore him down. I think it affected his play. He looked like a different player in Dallas. He looked energized. And I don't blame him for that. Quincy Williams was not happy the whole year. You know, he didn't like some of the coaches. He didn't like the way they were using him. I think that affected his play. Jermaine Johnson was not happy throughout the year. So you had some older. I go back to the quote from Harrison Phillips at the Super Bowl when he was interviewed on Radio Row. He said, AG and I got to try to remember the quote correctly, inherited a cancerous, truculent group. That says it right there.
That's
right
some
there,
quote. Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. God. Guys, think about what we've already said. So, you know, like last year, the Jets couldn't sustain a drive. At the very minimum, you've got a quarterback. If somebody's open on 3rd and 7, he's going to move the sticks. Last year, the Jets couldn't stop the run, couldn't turn you over. At every level, they've made additions that's going to change that. Oh, yeah, by the way, and I know you guys know this, but the penalties were down a little bit. Let's give Aaron some credit there last year. And the Jets special teams game, in every facet, I know Folk is gone, was phenomenal in the return game. So, you know, if you could steal, you know, some field position here and there, stop the run a little bit, have a couple of more drives. That's why when I say, and maybe I'm being too optimistic, but again, just the elevation of the floor, I just don't think it's going to be a moribund product. I don't. But we got all year to talk about this.
I think how they start really matters in this case, because like we talk about, you know, Glenn having to win games, but and what the record needs to be. But they can't get off to it, just a miserable start, because then I think you get that snowball effect. Here we go again. Like, I really think the fact they lost week one, even though they played so well for that game, but you had that awful Xavier Gibson kickoff return fumble. Like, I'm not saying they would have been a great team if they won that game, but I don't think they start 0-7 and it snowballs the way it did. Like, it felt like they lose week one, but oh, they played well. It's like they treated it like it was an actual victory when it wasn't. Then the Bills embarrassed them, and then here we go, 0-2 playing Tampa, tough loss, 0-3, and it's snowballed. I feel like they have to get out to a much better start just to kind of prove that Glenn's messaging is still reaching, you know, this team in year two.
Rich, take it, Rich.
Yeah, I know you guys are down on Aaron Glenn, and certainly you have to be based on, you know, the product on the field last year. But you have to assume that he's going to improve just by learning by his mistakes. Now, he has talked openly at the combine. He admits he made a lot of mistakes last year. He examined it, you know, a lot of self-reflection, try to improve. His game management's got to get better. He had a couple of disastrous clock management situations, you know, end of half situations. He was talking about how that is like all on coaching, the last 4 minutes in each half. Well, they were outscored by like a 3-1 margin in the last 4 minutes of each half. To me, that goes to coaching. Oof. He'll be better at that. The defense will be more connected with Glenn running it, and the offense – it has to be, I mean, just by the law, it has to be better than last year. I mean, Justin Fields was historically bad at quarterback.
God almighty. The offense will be better. You know, and listen, he made some of his own issues. And Rich, you were in the room every time, and Jake and I were reacting to it on various mediums. But, you know, when you get your face kicked in every week to be combative with the media over a quarterback situation that nobody cares about at that point, like, you're just inviting trouble. You're inviting conjecture. It just gives you the presentation that, you know, use the word connectivity earlier on the defense, but it just didn't seem like things were connected. He lost the wheel early. And for the record, you know, Jake, I'm more of a Glenn supporter and believer than Jake. I am. I'm not going to give him this the leash that maybe some will. I wanted him to come back because I realized he just had a dearth of talent. There was nobody there. So that last month of December, like the disparity in points, nobody was going to even be competitive. Parcells would have gotten his head kicked in. But he's got to stop putting out, or he's got to start putting out fires that he creates himself. It makes the job tougher, Rich.
Yeah, it does. It's his personality. He was like that as a player. I remember, you know, he's got a chip on his shoulder. He used it to his advantage as a player. It was an edge. It gave him that little extra edge that made him such a good player. And he's using that as a head coach. And you can't come in and try to be Parcells, you know, to use a Parcells quote, you know, you didn't have any sheepskins on the wall, you know? So, you know, you got to earn your way in. And he just came in so strong last year. And I think he's learned by that. I really do. Okay. I think he's a little bit humbled by it. And I'll see him in a couple of days. You know, I'm going to be in the owners' meetings in Phoenix early next week. We're going to be sitting down with Aaron Glenn on Tuesday morning for the coaches' breakfast. And we'll get a pretty good read on him then.
Yeah, what's an Aaron Glenn breakfast, by the way?
I'm sorry, but hold on a sec. So, he may have been humbled here. I think he was, and I think he's a good, decent man. But when he comes out and he says, the play calling is my superpower, you talk about being arrogant for no reason. Dude, your defense has stunk in Detroit, too.
Well, they stunk for 2.5 years.
He wasn't there for 10 years, Rich. How many years was he there?
The last year they were pretty good on defense. You know, it was a slow go.
That was the only year, though. It was not a quick fix. Were bad. Yeah.
He almost got, you know, people were calling for his head after the first year. You know, I mean, he almost got fired. Dan Campbell stuck with him and eventually, you know, it paid off. But that was a rough go for Aaron Glenn. And, you know, the superpower quote, when he said it, I kind of rolled my eyes, but, you know, it better be his superpower because they need some sort of intervention, some superpower intervention, you know, from something, because they got to be better than last year.
I'll make the joke because I see everyone in the chat is making it. Will he be awake for this breakfast that you have with him, Rich, at the owners' meetings?
Whoa.
Come on, Rich.
Yeah, he'll be awake. I'm not sure the sports writers will be awake. That's like 7:30 in the morning. You know, sports writers are not early birds. He'll be awake. But I'm not sure I'll be. But we'll see. We'll get
and,
it going.
And for the record, hold on. What? Because then some people said he was scrolling. Rich, do you actually think he was sleeping at the? You think he fell asleep for a minute?
I know the Jets insist that he wasn't. To me, it looked like he was.
Yes.
Yeah, it did look like it, I have to admit. And all I saw was the clip on social media. So
me too.
I don't
me
have
too.
Any more insight than that.
I
could
defended
he have been
him,
looking down at his tablet.
You
it's
dang.
Possible, but it kind of looked like he was sleeping.
Look, I think he dozed off. We've all been there. I mean, like, you know, you're just watching guys run in the straight line. Like Aaron Glenn, like a lot of coaches don't even go to the combine. People thought I was going to kill Glenn for that. And I defended him. I'm like, you know what? The combine's a little boring. I don't blame him for dozing off. I think he's, I don't question Aaron Glenn's work ethic. I just don't think he's a very good head coach. But like, if he dozed off for 10 seconds, it's unfortunate that the NFL Network cameras, unfortunately, they caught him in that moment.
They caught him. I would never question his work. The guy
me neither.
Is like, he works unbelievable hours. That's the one thing his work ethic is his, that's a superpower. I mean, I could bet on that. You know, the combine's boring, you know, and maybe he just, you know, I'm sure he was up at 3-4 o'clock in the morning. He usually gets up really early. And I'm sure he was a little tired.
I think he's going to be like, again, they've got to construct the right roster with the right people. And they brought in some guys as we hit, that's going to change the culture a bit. But one thing I believe with everything that I believe in is I think he's a man of incredible integrity. No doubt. I think he's going to be with the right people, a great leader of men. I really think if you get the right mix, like even just the kind of shape he's in, I know he got mocked when they scored the touchdown against Tampa and he was dancing up and down.
Yeah.
I couldn't move like that when I was 20. And trust me, I was trying. So I know he's in the weight room. I know that the young guys respect him, like kind of like their dad or grandfather, like the OG. And if they ever put on the film when he was playing, we all know he was a killer. Special teams corner. He was really good. I think he's got immense amount of integrity. I just, like Jake said, I hope he could coach.
Players he's here like, for. I mean, I talk to players all year, like on and off the record. And even off the record, like no one will say anything bad about him. You know, I mean, he's a good player's coach. They respect what he did in the game. He's direct with them. He doesn't BS. He just comes right out and says it. The players like him. It's just, he's got to get more players. You know, you need talent. And obviously they were well short last year.
If you're watching live, couple minutes left here. We saved some questions for the end of the show. So comment those. If you're on YouTube watching the show live, make sure you are subscribed to the channel. We are about to hit 1,000 subscribers, which is pretty awesome. We're nice. A little more than 100 away from that. So big thank you to everyone who's watching our debut episode. By next week, you'll be able to super chat. You'll be able to really interact with the show. So keep it coming. And a couple questions I pulled through our listeners. This first one is a funny one from Danger Zone. It goes, does BT ever get mistaken for Robert Sala at restaurants?
I get that a lot. Like, especially when I'm a little tan now because I was sitting by the pool in San Diego with St. John's this past weekend. But I get a real tan and, you know, the shaved dome. Now, when Rob was rocking that beard for a while, I've got some grays pop, unless he's dying that thing, which he might be, which I don't do. You know, but when he's cleanly shaven and I'm cleanly shaven, I don't know about at restaurants, but I've definitely heard that a lot. Yeah, I've heard that for sure. You guys think I look like him or no?
I think you could pull it off for a Halloween costume.
Yeah,
he's jacked though. I mean, he's absolutely yoked. I'm definitely not yoked, like not even close. Like he's jacked.
He spends a lot of time in the weight room.
Yep.
Johnny Boy writes in, question for the panel: thoughts on the Jets drafting a kicker in round 6 or 7? I was going to mention this earlier. I like most of the moves they've made. The one move I cannot wrap my head around is why not just pony up the extra, whatever it is, to keep Nick Folk, who you know is awesome. If you're bringing back DeMario Davis and Geno Smith, why not keep one of the best kickers the Jets have ever had in Nick Folk?
I agree 100%. He got $4 million guaranteed from Atlanta. I think the Jets offered about $3 million guaranteed. So the $1 million difference, I mean, I would have extended, you know, I would have gone and given him the extra, you know, just he missed one field goal last year. I mean, he was damn near perfect. No signs of slowing down. I think the Jets were a little concerned about the age. You know, he's 41. And plus, he has to go to an indoor stadium and kick in the NFC South. You know, a lot of comfy environments for kickers there. So I think that was part of it. But if I were, I agree with you, Jake. I would have extended a little bit more to try to keep Nick Folk.
I wouldn't draft
a kicker. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Jake. My bad. I wouldn't draft one. I think you can find somebody, I know, on the street, whatever, but I don't think you have to draft a kicker. Rich, do you?
No. Cade York, I mean, he's just a lay. He might not even make it to training camp. They got this kid, Lenny Craig, from the German Football League, who had, apparently he's got a really strong leg, from Germany. We'll see. He's on the roster.
Love that.
Lenny Craig. Or Lenny Dykstra wasn't available.
Duncan wants to know, we haven't talked about Sadiq at 16. He's the Oregon tight end. I will say this. It'd be pretty funny after 2 years of the Bowers and the Warren and Loveland debate if now they take Sadiq seemingly out of nowhere at 16. BT, I'll start with you. Your thoughts on Kenyon Sadiq as a possible option at 16 versus one of the other wide receivers?
I don't think there's any chance. I wouldn't do it. I mean, I know with the workouts, I get it. I mean, all-time workout. I think Mason Taylor's got a chance to be really good. Now, he might not have the wiggle. He's never going to be a Bowers or this kid from Oregon either. Obviously, the numbers don't say that. Woody runs the 40 and all that stuff. But, in 2 years, even maybe this year, with a much more competent offense, you tell me Mason Taylor can't be a 60 to 70 reception guy for 700-800 yards and 5 touchdowns? I think he could. I really like him, guys.
Yeah. I've heard some rumblings in the scouting community about the Jets and Kenyon Sadiq. I mean,
really?
if the wide receivers are gone, if Tate, Jordan Tyson, and Mekhi Lemon are gone, and you're sitting there at 16 and Sadiq is there, which I think he probably will be, that's going to be an interesting one. I mean, he is off the charts athletically. I mean, the guy ran a sub 4.4. He's a good kid. There's no red flags. I mean, you could run a lot of two tight end stuff. I mean, the Jets need dynamic weapons. I think we all agree on that. They got Garrett Wilson, and pretty much that's it on the perimeter.
Yeah.
So you split him out, and you use Mason Taylor as your traditional wide tight end. You got something there. You got a tough matchup for the defense.
Jake, would you do that?
I'd prefer receiver, but I think what concerns me is Jordan Tyson might be there, and this is a guy who didn't participate in the combine, didn't participate in his pro day. He had a hamstring injury. So what's the real story why he's still not healthy at this point of the offseason? Now we're going to draft him and put him on the MetLife turf. That makes me a little wary. It's like him versus Sadiq, I might lean with Sadiq. I think my real answer is I'd love them to trade out of 16 and get extra picks. But if we're being realistic and that doesn't exist, I'm open to it. I don't love it. I think I'd rather go maybe get the best offensive lineman on the board at that point. But I'm at least open to the idea of taking Sadiq because I do think he's basically like a giant slot where he'd factor in the offense.
One note on Jordan Tyson, our Field Yates reported this today. He's having a workout for NFL teams on April 17th at Arizona State. He's going to do positional drills. Obviously, he's had that hamstring injury. When he's healthy, he's a really good player.
And he is.
So I think that's going to be a tough – in 2023, the Jets were looking for a wide – quick story here. They were looking for a wide receiver to pair with Garrett Wilson. They had, the 16th pick in the first round after moving back one. Maybe it was the 15th pick after moving back one with Green Bay. And I was checking in with some people at the Jets in that old regime, and I was checking on wide receivers, and I asked about one particular receiver who I thought might go in the first round. I go, what about this guy? And he's like, he's slow on the stopwatch. He's a slot receiver, and he's got a hamstring injury. Why would we take that guy? That guy turned out to be Jackson Smith and Jigba. Who was picked like 20th. So the hamstring injury is always – it's a tough thing to – because the talent's there, but he's got kind of this injury that's been lingering for a while. So it's always a balancing act with teams.
The only thing, real fast, the only thing that I would add on the tight end, I was very resolute, very fast. I would not do that at 16. The only way that I would even remotely entertain it, I would much rather see them take the best available tight end by far than the third or fourth best receiver that they like rather than love. But I still wouldn't do it. Just a little context there.
The only thing I could say about that story that Rich told, at least positive, JSN getting paid kind of sheds light on the fact that the Garrett Wilson extension, as long as he stays healthy this year and continues to be the player he's been, I think that's going to age really well for the Jets. That they were proactive and got it done. Garrett's making like $32.5 million AAV, and now we're seeing Smith and Jigba be at $42.5 million, and Nakua's going to get paid. So I feel like the Garrett Wilson contract, give credit to Muji in the front office last year, that's going to age well, Rich, going forward.
Yeah, and they didn't trade him. like they did Sauce. So that's always a positive.
Yeah, but you got to wonder, guys. I love Garrett Wilson, but you got to wonder how much more of this losing he's going to tolerate. No, they didn't trade him, but I'm happy they didn't. But if it's another 4-13 season, and you know Geno doesn't play well or gets hurt, and whomever is behind them comes in and stinks, and he just can't get the ball, he's going to probably say enough is enough, man. I wouldn't blame him at that point. Would you? I'd say get me out of here.
Nor would I. So yeah. something to watch in the future.
No doubt. Gentlemen, this was a ton of fun. An hour flew by. We'll do even more questions next week. Rich, you're going to be at the owners' meeting, so when you get back from that, we'll have plenty, I'm sure, to react to. Is Woody going to speak? We know Glenn and Muji are going to speak, but is Woody going to do his annual State of the Jets?
That there might not be Woody. No, there might not be a Woody. Yeah.
That's it.
maybe for the best. I don't know. Yeah.
Let's clip that last thing that Rich just said there.
That's our first drop on future episodes. Right there.
Might not be a Woody, Rich just said. So let me get this straight here, guys. We're done? I mean, that's it. This was too good. Let's go. What are we doing?
Yeah, it was fun,
man.
BT, plug yourself, and then we'll get Rich has got the Flight Deck podcast as well. Tell the audience, a lot of people are experiencing this for the first time, coming from all over. Where can people find you, BT?
Every day, 10 a.m., BT Unleashed on YouTube. Obviously doing St. John stuff, so I'll be down in D.C. this weekend. But every day, 10 a.m., it's at least an hour and a half. Sometimes it's two, and it's on YouTube, obviously. BT Unleashed, go check it out. Give it a like. Hit it up with a sub. Very interactive. You know, you'll see me comment on the page a lot. A lot of stuff behind the scenes, like with St. John's, whatever. Some youth content as well, but it's basically like the show I used to do on The Fan, only it's always two or three topics a day, and I'm having a blast, man. People have supported it so far, so I'm very appreciative of that, very thankful.
And Rich, obviously, people read your work over at ESPN, but you have a podcast as well. Plug everything you have going on.
Yeah, and even though I bleed orange, I'll be rooting for the Johnnies this weekend, so we got to root for New York. The Flight Deck podcast, you pick it up anywhere, and ESPN.com, that's where all my stuff is.
Love it, and you can find me on YouTube every day, 10 a.m., 4 p.m. We're doing daily Jets content over on the YouTube channel. Just search Jake Asman and subscribe there. Guys, this was a ton of fun. Flew by, as we said. Looking forward to next week.
Can't wait. Right. Good stuff, boys. Good stuff, man.
Big thank you to everyone who tuned in. Make sure, again, you like the video, subscribe to the channel. We'll have clips from these live episodes on the channel throughout the week. So if you ever miss anything, make sure you check that out. For Rich Cimini and Brandon Tierney, this is Jake Asman saying thanks for watching. This has been the first ever Jets Collective.